Welcome back, guys. Episode 70 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
Episode 70. That sounds... Dude, even numbers are my favorite. Who we got today, Tristan?
Youngstown's favorite. Boom Boom Mancini.
Yeah, Ray Boom Boom Mancini. Man, when I was a young boy, I remember watching his matches. I was super young, though. My dad, the whole town seemed to rally around this guy. And it was one of those things, too, that as I... You always heard about him. He was a legend. I actually, at one time when I was young, thought that Boom Boom Mancini and Rocky were the same person.
Yeah, Italian. Both Italian dudes. Both come from humble beginnings and both great fighters. Was he a southpaw?
Mancini?
I've seen him switch hitting quite a bit. So
I don't think so.
I might have to ask him.
I remember looking at I can visualize there was this famous poster of Boom Boom, and he has his long brown hair. He's really young, early 20s. I think he's Orthodox.
Yeah.
But just ask him. I mean...
I might have to ask him because I just keep seeing different sort of styles from him. Maybe switch hitting.
Is that common? Would that be common for somebody at that elite level?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Like switching up, you would be either Orthodox or Southpaw throughout your career.
It's very, very hard. Sometimes Floyd Mayweather does it, but in rarity, very rarity.
And Floyd will do it like within a rally.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll just switch you up on it.
Within a round. But yeah, sometimes from what I saw, maybe... Sometimes, depending, because sometimes old footage can be reflected, so sometimes it can be...
Okay, it's kind of like a mirror sort
of
thing.
Mirror, yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so I'll just ask him about it, but it'll be interesting to see whether he was a southpaw, because I have heard him say something about that before, but some really interesting, if you haven't yet, before you listen to this, check out The Good Son.
Okay.
We've been speaking about it quite a bit, that movie that I made about Ray and... his life and all the different...
Was this a documentary?
Yeah, it was kind of a documentary movie, and it's got Ed O'Neill in it. And
okay.
It's got... who's the dude that did The Wrestler?
Mickey Rourke. Okay. Yeah, Boom Boom has been involved post-boxing career a lot with Hollywood, directing, producing. The one that I like is the Youngstown pick called Still Standing. A childhood friend of mine was in that one, Kelly Pavlik, who was also a former world champ, and it outlines the... Basically, I think from Youngstown, from like the 1920s to modern day, the ups and downs, how it went from a booming steel town to basically a, you know, dilapidated old ghost town, which is really sad. And you got to see that when we went home in June. I took you there, but Still Standing is really good. And Boom Boom, though, I mean, he really epitomizes the importance of coming from your town, having loved, and then also being loved by your town. And I'm pretty sure he just recently, he was out in L.A. for years, and I'm pretty sure he recently just moved back to Youngstown. So I want to chat about that, what that's been like, and also see what he's been up to.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to chatting to him, because I know how lovely the people are from Youngstown, and there's some good roots, some good loyalty out there. So I'm sure that a lot of people back home in your hometown are looking forward to probably hearing from him.
Definitely. You said that you mentioned earlier that he's doing is it a weekly show?
Well, that's what it's to come up on his website, so I have to ask him if he's still doing it. It'll be interesting. A Thursday night Boom Boom Room, so
yeah.
I'm not sure what the Boom Boom Room happens in there, but
dude, the sounds boom
pretty
room.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's a nickname that they gave from his dad, Lenny. Everyone who's from Youngstown knows that story. And then to see, man, there's so much to talk about. I mean, the guy's career was world champion, young too, 21 years old. Caesar's Palace. This guy comes from the day and age before pay-per-view. So these matches were played and televised. Probably, I don't know the numbers, but everyone who had a television were able to tune in on Saturday afternoons. Wide world of sports.
That was way better when they used to have non-pay-per-view fighting. That's why the fighters were known more. That's why boxing right now is in mainstream, because their boxes are only seen on pay-per-view. And then it's too expensive and people don't want to take a chance of seeing shitty fights. So... they don't take a chance.
Is it that expensive?
Yeah, it's pretty expensive. It's like $50 a fight.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that Dana White, I mean, with the UFC, does really well is he kind of has a balance.
He splits his talent across the Fox Sports stuff as well, and he's got his UFC pass, whatever it's called.
Fight pass. To where if you can't afford the pay-per-view, you can definitely still watch your guys. And a lot of times those fighters on the fight pass are champions, and there'll be belts on the line as well.
Yeah, okay. That top line, the UFC top line fights lately have been pretty brilliant. They've just got to be really careful, especially that show they put on in Cleveland. That was a disgrace.
What are you talking about?
The one with CG.
What's that was name? A disgrace.
Punk.
That was an awesome card. What are you talking about? Stipe, baby. Yes. World champion Stipe knocking out Alistair Overeem.
Stipe saved that
Tristan's
whole show.
Drinking some Haterade. That Cleveland card, in my opinion, was one of the best cards. Really? For sure, man. Every fight on that card was a good fight. And the CM Punk fight with Mickey Gall, you got to look into the fight like this, guys. That was, for me, I was very inspired and motivated by that fight because it wasn't about, you got to see.
Yeah, I agree. The Stipe fight was good, but when I hear other fighters say that they thought that was an embarrassing card, then you have to start taking notice.
Well, the thing about the other fighters now is there's a lot of, like, resentment going down in this modern day of Conor McGregor about money.
Yeah, I agree.
And then they get the guy like CM Punk, who really does really well off because of the WWE days. But if you just watch that fight of a guy who has determination and grit and something to prove to himself, nothing to prove to anybody else, late 30s, something to prove to himself just to see if he could do something. And then it's not even about winning or losing at that moment. It's about fulfilling a goal, the action of. And that's what I took from that. And then also in the post-fight, hearing him speak, and you kind of got that sense. But I'm a homer. I'm a, even if that card, all 13, 11 fights were garbage, but the one fight was Ohio boy who won the world championship, that's still going to go down, in my opinion, as a great card. So I am a little biased.
You Cleveland boys.
Stipe, baby. You UFC are. World Champion, episode, was it 54 of the Vision Board podcast? Yeah. Hey. Check it out, guys. If you haven't got it, we got them on.
You are very loyal.
Dude, got to represent the Red Sea hat. I think I posted a video recently on my YouTube, and I was getting comments about, where's your Red Sea hat? Where's your red Cleveland hat? I was like, I didn't know people noticed. I didn't have the hat on, but yeah, I represent Cleveland wherever, man.
You're a funny man.
Youngstown, Ohio, 330.
Guys, just remember to pick up your ebook, your free ebook, your abs ebook from the Vision Board podcast. It's the workout from myself and Johnny. Quick little meal plan in there too. It's a free download on www.thevisionboardpodcast.com. It's on the homepage. It's also on the / ebook page as well. Like I said, free download. And you also get to find out when all the next episodes come out and what we're doing on the podcast. So check it out. Free download. Just leave us your email and your name, and we'll make sure that we put you on the distribution list and send you a copy of the ebook. Before we get on, also a big shout out to Onnit. We've got a whole big page there, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/Onnit. Johnny, take it away, my man.
Yeah, guys, on the Onnit page, once you get there, you can check out their products. You can do a little bit of research. If you guys are like Tristan and myself, you're going to want to read and investigate some products before you purchase them. So the positive thing about that, you'll be able to check what New Mood is about. You'll be able to check with Alpha Brain, Shroom Tech, different types of proteins. They have different training equipment. So guys, all you fitness coaches out there, if you really want to change the game up, they got some awesome primate kettlebells in the form of gorillas. They have they just released the new Captain America series kettlebells, which are really cool. We got to see them demoed, actually, when we were in the Onnit Training Academy before they were released. So those were super cool. Also, they have apparel. Whenever you're proceeding to the checkout, use keyword Vision Board to receive 10% off of all of your purchases.
Yeah, awesome. So guys, check that out. There is some cool stuff on their website as well, so check their website out. But in the meantime, let's get Ray Boom Boom Mancini on.
Yeah, buddy.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Our special guest is a legend of boxing. He's the pride of Youngstown, Ohio, with a record of 29-5 with 23 KOs. He held the WBA Lightweight Championship from 1982 to 1984. We welcome Ray Boom Boom Mancini. Ray, my man, thank you so much for your time and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very honored to be on the show, especially for all my from Australia, man. This is something, man. This is something. Now, what time is it down your way? Now, I'm always trying to figure out what's the difference.
It's 6 o'clock in the morning, my man.
6 o'clock, yeah.
And it is what?
You're a day ahead of us, correct? Day ahead of us.
We are. We're on Saturday.
Okay, you got it. You got it.
Yeah, Ray. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. So, are you you currently moved back to Youngstown, correct?
I moved back to Youngstown November of 2014 after 30 years in Los Angeles. Yeah, it seemed like a good idea at the time. I hadn't spent a full winter in 30 years, and it was the worst one in 40. Lucky me. And but you know, I like being home. You know, if you know anything, well, you know about Youngstown. You're from here, but. For my Australian friends out there, the Youngstown's on the climb again. You know, we were second biggest steel producing city in the world forever. And then in 1977, the mill shut down. And it's really from that point on, September 19th of 1977, you know, 5,000 men in one day lost their job. 10,000 men in 1 week, 25,000 men in 1 month, 50,000 men in 6 months lost their jobs. It's decimated our town. And to this day, I don't think we've fully ever recovered. But now, little by little, it's coming back, and it's a resurgence going on, and I wanted to be part of it. You know, I wanted to be part of it. So it's a good time to be home.
Ray, man, that's awesome. I'm glad you just said that. Tristan and I were listening to an episode of The Fighter and the Kid a few weeks back, and Ed O'Neill was talking. He brought you up, and him and Shab were talking about you moving back to Youngstown, and O'Neill was saying that was good for you. And I was thinking, I was trying to sit on the idea of how it could be good for you. And let me know if I'm wrong here. Because you were so away for so long, did you ever have the opportunity to be loved, to actually spend time in that town that you grew your roots, you became a world champion? Or was it one of those things like you would visit and then leave, visit? And then, you know, just how is it to be embraced by your hometown right now?
Well, first of all, I've never, you know, even though I lived in L.A., I was always visiting. I'd come back here all the time. I was back home 4 or 5 times a year. So I was like, and anything I ever did, you know, I did a film here in 2000, produced a film. Over the last 15 years, I've done 4 major projects here in Youngstown. I always brought it back to Youngstown. Always wanted to bring the business back to Youngstown. And so people appreciate that. And like I said, I'd visit back all the time. So it wasn't like, even though I was living in L.A., people would say, where's home? I said, Youngstown, Ohio. They go, I thought you live in L.A. I said, I do, but that's not home. I never considered home. I always wanted to come back. I just knew it was a matter of time. And so, you know, timing is everything. And I'm waiting for my youngest son, my youngest child. He went off to college. I sat my 2 oldest down. I said, look, I have an opportunity to go home and do some things. They said, Pop, go ahead. You did your job. So the hardest part for me was, you know, usually it's the kids going off, leaving home, going off to school or whatever. It was me who left, you know. But they understood. And in the meantime, they've visited here several times. I've been back there a couple times. So, and you know, when they say you're a phone call away, it's the truth. So I've been in touch with my kids. I talk to them on a regular daily basis almost. So, but they knew it was time for me to come home. And even my son, when he visited, when he visited last year, he said, you know, Pop, he said, it's a good thing you moved back here. He said, this town's good for you, and this town needs you. And I don't really know if it's so much the town needs me as maybe I need the town. So you know, man, it's a good synergy going on, and it's a good relationship. And like I said, my relationship with my town is different than most.
Yeah.
So Tristan, you'd have to understand. You know, Youngstown's a great.
Funny that you say that, because Johnny took me there earlier this year, and it was the people was awesome, because we stayed in Liberty.
So Ray, Tristan and I did this U.S. tour in June, and in between New York City and Miami, we stopped in Youngstown. Now,
sure.
I grew up, my first 14...
Liberty.
Yeah, well, my first 14 years were in Smoky Hollow, so...
Oh,
yeah.
Nice love. Hey, Smoky Hollow's a great part of town.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, now there's not a whole lot there, and they've ripped down a lot of houses, because university, you know, everything else, but great part of town.
Yeah,
great
man.
Great part of town.
It was sad.
A lot of history there.
Yeah, I know Eddie DeBartlow Sr.'s from there. A lot of people forget... When I went home and we saw that they just tore, like, my childhood home's gone. It's like Youngstown State built all their dormitories down there.
Yeah.
So Tristan got to see that, and, you know, I was bragging about wedding soup, bragging about the Italian food, because I'm Italian-American as well.
Sure.
And
Ray's sister made me eat the wedding soup. I liked it, though. I had it every single
day. Oh, it's good. Yeah, oh, it's good. But people, you know, they don't call it wedding soup anywhere but this part of the country, you know? Like, and it's just, you know, Tristan, this part of the country, depression food has become now a delicacy.
Yeah.
In this part of the country, you know, polenta, greens and beans and things like that, that were depression foods, much like wedding soup would come from depression. And now they're delicacies, you know, and they're wonderful, great part, and very part of our culture and part of our identity here in Youngstown, the food.
Yeah, while we're speaking about Youngstown, what's your fondest memory as a child?
As a child, growing up in Youngstown was a Pollyanna life. Growing up in Youngstown, you know, the steel mills are booming. It was a great, I grew up in a loving, you know, wonderful middle class neighborhood, middle class family, and it was wonderful, man. Everybody, kids running on the streets, kids, you know, banging, you know, everyone's over each other's out in the streets. The kids, you know, boom, go in to eat, you come back out, and then when the lights, you know, the street lights go on, parents, you go, you know, you go home. Next morning, it's the same thing. So it's just, it was a wonderful life. It really was. And when the steel mills were going, everybody was eating good. Everybody had money and, you know, car in a, you know, car or two in the driveway, could send your kids to a good school, had a nice, you know, middle class family home, and it was a wonderful life. But when the steel mill shut down, that really took its toll on a lot of people, man. It hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, Ray, you were in your late teens then, correct? In the late
70s? I was a sophomore in high school.
My question is this then. So boxing, obviously, and the, you know, the faith you had in yourself and your family and the sport probably kept you out of trouble. Do you feel, though, without boxing, you would still have evolved into a very successful human if you didn't have that boxing in your life?
Well, I like to think so, but, you know, who knows? It's like people ask me later on, reporters would say to me, if you weren't a fighter, what would you have done? I said, I can't answer that. I can't, because this is all I've ever wanted to do. Now, I was a good student. I had, you know, I had academic scholarships to go to college. I had a professional baseball offer. I had a baseball scholarship to go to college. But other opportunities, but I wanted to be a fighter. And I'd like to think I'd been successful. But, you know, it's hard. But, you know, people would say, but there's nothing else I wanted to be other than a fighter. So I'd like to think I'd been successful in some way. But, you know, I don't know what form of life. I like to think, you know, business life, I would have done well. I think I would have done well. If I went to baseball, I like to think I would have succeeded. But, you know, these are the things you think as a kid. But who knows? Who knows? It would have been interesting to find out. But obviously, I took the right path, and, you know, it took me to where it did. And, you know, I believe in destiny in many ways. I believe in destiny in our lives. And I knew this, you know. You know, growing up in Youngstown, like I said, when I was growing up, it wasn't to go, you know, graduate, go to college. It wasn't that. It was graduate high school, get married, meet a girl, get married, raise a family, go to steel mill, get a job, meet a girl, raise a family, and, you know, have a nice life. I wanted something different at that time. I said, man, you know, steel mills, I seen my neighborhood. All my neighborhood were mill rats. My father worked at a fabricating plant where they made steel office furniture, general fireproofing there on the north side. You know, it wasn't a mill, but it was a fabricating plant. You know, it was the same thing, hot, sweaty. It was a hard, hard type of life. And I just wanted something different. I see my brother worked in the steel mills, all my friends, my neighbors, and I said, man, I can't do that. I can't do that. You know, I want something different. And so I was fortunate to you know, go after it. And now people say in retrospect, but at that time it wasn't, you know, Youngstown didn't advocate go to college, go off to New York to be an actor, go be a musician. They didn't really support the arts in a sense, you know. It wasn't like, okay, go to New York and be a fighter. No, it was like, what are you, crazy? You get a job, go to steel mill, you can at least, you know, get a job, have, you know, a good income coming and support your family. But be, you know, I said, no, that's not what I want. So I was fortunate to follow my dream. And that's what I tell people. I think more than anything, I was a good athlete. I wasn't a great athlete. I was a good athlete, but what I had was a great ability to dream. And that's what took me farther than anything, was my ability to dream.
Ray, I want to share a story. You brought up baseball, and I ended up playing for a long time. That was my sport. But I think I was 6 years old. I remember this very fondly, and ever since then, I wanted to chat with you. I was at Pemberton Park with my dad and my cousin Jeff, who went to Jeff Stofko. He was, at the time, in his late teens, hitting bombs, ended up playing for Youngstown State. And you were in the crowd there, and I ended up getting a photo with you. I'm like 6 years old. And for the longest time, I thought you and Rocky were the same person.
I appreciate it. Hey, don't worry about that. Hey, for a long time, people thought that Rocky Balboa was the heavyweight champ of the world. Trust me. Yeah. Trust me, a lot of people did.
Yeah, and my question comes...
He's not the champion of the world?
Oh.
Yeah.
Right? Sorry, Daddy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, So we were, Tris and I were speaking with another boxing legend, Larry Holmes, and we were both pretty shocked when he confessed to us that he still hits the pads, he still hits the bag, and he does he does rounds every now and then. Do you ever get in the gym and spar, shadow box, anything like that?
No, I do a boxing workout. Oh, I do a boxing workout a couple of days a week, but I don't spar no more. I mean, I don't spar because, you know, that's the reason I retired. I don't want to get smacked in the head no more. That's the reason. But I tell you the truth, though, you know, when I was up to a couple of years ago, when I was living in L.A., there was a gym, and my son and me were going to gym together, and it's a gym that director Peter Berg runs, Wild Card West.
Great actor.
You know, you got all the actors are in there, you know, all the actors are the pretend tough guys. So then you go, okay, we'll go see one tough guy. What's the kind of tough guy you are, you know? And but a lot of I move around with him, I play around with him, you know. But my son would go into me, and we'd body punch. You go as a fighter. You say, "Okay, I still want to see if I can take good body punching." And now my son's 180 pounds, is strong, and he's whacking me. And I'm thinking, "Ooh, you know, I could take." But I'm, you know, I'm banging him back. And but that's as close as I got as to any sparring. You know, it's nothing to the head. I said, "Man, I got a few more brain cells. Let's leave them alone."
Attaboy.
You know, yeah. But I do the work. I do shadow box and jump rope, and you know, mainly shadow. At this age, look, my doctor told me. You know, I'm 55 now, so you got to work out smarter, not harder.
Yeah, that's true.
He said, you got no business hitting heavy bag. Speed bag's fine, double end bag. I never hit a double end bag when I was fighting because it never had no purpose. But now it does.
Yeah.
You know, so I still love doing the, you know, and it keeps the, here's what people don't understand. As you get older, you want to keep the muscles moving and you want to keep the joints limber, you know, oiled up. So that's why the shadow boxing is great. Jumping rope is fabulous. You know, all that stuff. So anyhow. This is why I do the boxing workout, but I just everything but sparring.
Are you still? Do you still roll? Do you still do BJJ?
You know what? I haven't rolled in a couple of years because again, my body's feeling too good.
Awesome.
My body feels too good. My body's getting broken down. You know, these guys, you get out of there, you're hunched over, man. You're breaking. You know, my back's hurt, my lower back, my shoulders. Because again, I just go in there to roll, make sure. You know, I just want to learn. You know, God forbid, that in the street. You know, I don't have no 18-year-old kid choking me out. And if I, you know, 9 out of 10 times you're going to the dirt in the street. But I just want to learn. But geez, oh man, a lot of these young kids, it was rough on my body. So I stopped rolling.
Hey Ray, you mentioned your boys. Did they ever have ambitions to become fighters?
No, thank God. You know, and I never told them, no, you're not going to be a fighter. I never told them that. Because my parents never told me that. You got to leave it up to them. But I was fortunate when they were both asked, when my older son was asked when he was about 10, 12 years old, whatever, they said, you're going to be a fighter too? He said, no, my father's a world champion. It'd be nothing for me to prove. He said, I'm proud of my father. He said, but I'm going to make my name in a different field. And then when my younger son, and his name's Leonardo, and Leo, everyone calls him Leo, he's an actor, and you're going to hear about him. He's going to be a star someday. Now because he's my son, because he's done it right. He's gone to school, he's theater school, he's done a lot of stage, he's made his bones on the stage. And he's really, really a terrific actor. And you're going to, so he did it the right way. My younger son, Ray, was asked that when he, my younger son, Ray, was asked the same thing. He said, no, he said, look, he said, my father's champion. I don't want to have to live up to that. He said, I want to make my own name. And I'm going to do things, you know, become, you know, successful in my own field. So they are smart enough to understand that.
That's awesome.
Thank God. Yeah.
Ray, I just want to ask you about your style because I've just been watching a fair bit of footage on you lately, and some of the old footage on YouTube just gets mirrored a little bit. So I just wanted to ask you, were you a southpaw or a switch hitter at all?
Yes, I'm a southpaw. I'm a southpaw in everything I do. But when I fought my first six amateur fights as a southpaw, and my amateur trainer told me, he said, look, he said, I'm not going to be able to get you no fights because nobody wants to fight a southpaw. He said, you're aggressive, you're strong, you hit hard. I'm not going to be able to get you no fights. He said, so I got to convert you. So he converted me, and I was 15 years old when he converted me. And, I, you know, it took, you know, a couple months to get it down. And I was getting, in the meantime, I'm getting smacked around in the gym. But once I cut on and got, you know, my left hook come around, that's when I said, yeah, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Best thing ever happened to me.
Sounds like very similar. Sure. Miguel Cotto is very similar as well. He's a left-hander.
Yeah. And Marvin Hagler was a right-hander, converted right-hander. And that's why he was successful with that his right hook.
Yeah. That,
so,
yeah,
cool. You know, but yeah, but I do everything as a southpaw, except when I play baseball, I bat righty. And when I golf righty. But I do everything as a southpaw other than that. But if you think about it, why do so many people convert from when they're orthodox? You know, they throw orthodox, but they bat lefty because it's your power hand coming through. So for me, I bat righty, and it's my power hand coming through. So it's unusual, but it works. It worked.
Ray, one of my good childhood friends, I played Little League on the south side at Uptown Kiwanis.
That's where I played, Uptown Kiwanis.
What team did you play for?
D.D. Davis.
Okay, man. I played for a team called Ohio Carpet. And one of my closest friends ended up becoming, he was my catcher and I was the pitcher. We dominated. He ended up becoming the middleweight champ, Kelly Pavlik. And I know, you know, Kelly had an amazing career. And he's, you know, not, I don't know what's going on right now. You know, it seems like in Youngstown, if somebody gets to a certain level, they're going to love you. But then when adversity, you know, pokes his face in, things end up going downhill. What would you, not only to a guy like Kelly, but to anybody out there, what advice would you give to somebody who is going through adversity to get through that, that may be something that has worked for you in the past?
Well, look, you got to rely on your faith. I mean, that's the, you know, Youngstown is a city of faith, family, and friends. You know, that's what we are. And, you know, in all respect, Kelly's been, he's been the biggest part of his own undoing. You know, people, friends tell you and everything, and you cannot pay attention. If you don't pay attention, you keep living the lifestyle. You know, at some point, I was confronted with all of the obstacles, all the temptations out there, but you got to know what you want to do in life. And second of all, you know, my father taught me a long time ago, when you walk out this door, you represent this family, not just yourself. Don't ever bring any shame to this family. You carry the Mancini name. I gave you that name. So, you know, you have an obligation to your, not only to your family, but and friends, but now you're representative of the town. You represent the town. When they think of Youngstown, they think of, you know, certain people. So I don't think he understood. I don't think he was prepared to handle success. And that's just no knock on him. It is. There's a lot of, you know, throughout history, a lot of entertainers, actors, and musicians couldn't handle success.
Yeah.
But that's the problem. He brought it upon himself. There's a lot of people willing to forgive. Yeah. You know, Youngstown's a forgiving city. But you can't keep doing the same things and saying, and then finally people say, hey, okay, heck with him.
Yeah.
You know, it ain't like they turned it back on him, but he kind of turned it back on us by doing the same. If you don't learn from your mistakes and you keep doing the same silly stuff, then people say, hey, heck with you.
Yeah,
that's all. Ray, common sense.
Did you ever hear what Buster Douglas said about one of the things that was the detrimental part about beating Mike Tyson? And he basically said what you just said there. He said up before that fight, the only people in the whole world that thought he was going to win was him and his camp. He knew he was going to beat Mike. But he said what they didn't prepare him for is how to be and how to act after he won.
Well, that's just exactly right. Success is something that's trial and error. You can't teach anybody how to go through it. It's trial and error. You have to be in the fire before you realize what it is. And it's just how you're brought up. You know, like Buster, you know, James is a good friend. He's a very humble guy. Right? You know, like I said, it's hard not to. When you just beat Godzilla, you know, you just beat, you know, the baddest man on the planet, and you whipped his ass. Hey, it's hard. But James, I thought, you know, he just was overwhelmed by it. And you know, I thought he handled it as best as possible. Best as possible. You know, the only thing is, it was, again, his own undoing. He was eating like he was going to the electric chair. So he didn't stay in shape like he should have. And so when he fought Holyfield, he wasn't prepared properly.
Yeah, 100%.
You know? But James is a great guy. But again, success is anybody. Look, there's numerous examples to all the facets of entertainment and walks of life. The people that weren't able to handle success. And again, it's just part of it is becoming that way you're brought up. Part of it is the friends and family that you keep around you. They keep you humble. And part of it is your own. My father taught me a long time ago. Since I was a little boy, used to tell me things like, Raymond, always remember, one day the headline, next day the breadline. Same people calling you champ on the way in or calling you bum on the way out. Don't ever take this fame serious. And I didn't. I had fun with it. I had a good time with it. But I knew it was borrowed time. You know, fame is like elected office. Same people put you in will take you out real quick. You got to enjoy it. Take the ride. Yeah. But it's all borrowed. So.
Hey, Ray, I heard you say, you know, your relationship with your father, I've watched a few different things, and you were obviously quite close. Obviously, his career was cut short tragically when he went over to overseas for the war. Did you get to watch many of his fights when you were growing up?
No, my father. There's no film footage of my father. We actually found one. There's only like 10 seconds. There was a guy in New York, but it's only 10 seconds. Yeah, as I said, I was 15 years old. You know, you have to understand, my whole career didn't last more than 8 years, 8.5 years. 3 years in amateurs and 5.5 years as a pro. So that's my whole career is 8.5 years. So that's one thing I'm most proud of is I can still spell fight. I can still spell it. Yeah. And part of it is, you know, people, I make a joke of it, but a half joke, I think, because so many guys can't. The reason is a lot of these guys that you find out fought since they were 8, 9 years old. I was playing baseball, football, basketball. I played all other sports. I don't know why, but you know, I'm not a big advocate of young kids going in the gym. I go to the gym to learn how to train. Yeah, to move. You know, I used to train down in my cellar, hit my father's old army duffel bag full of rags. I learned how to jump rope as, you know, playing basketball. I used to do all that stuff. But to be a fighter, you know, I don't want to get smacked in the head. You know, when you're too young to get smacked in the head. But it's the same thing they're talking about young kids playing football now too. They're, you know, I played Pop Warner football. Thank God I come through with it okay. But, you know, these are the type of things you got to be concerned about nowadays, you know. But in the gym, you get burned out. So I wouldn't advocate a young kid going to the gym too young because you get burned out.
Yeah. I think it's crazy. I played football as well. Started at 6 years old. Played until I was 18. And it's crazy to think that I think about it quite often how, like, when I was a young kid, they would teach us how to hit. And they would teach us to hit with our helmet.
Helmet first.
Yeah.
Head first.
And I was a small dude at that age. So,
yeah,
like.
You and both, yeah.
Yeah. So it was really important to prove to my father that I wasn't weak. So I would probably the hardest hitter on the field a lot of those years. What I wanted to ask you now, could you talk a little bit about the Boom Boom Room? Tris and I were reading about it. Is this a project of yours or is this just a segment?
No. It's a project. We were on the air for a little over a year. About a year and a half. And then May, I went to Cuba, so we went on hiatus. When I came back, the Indians were doing well. They said, well, let's wait till see. And then the Indians have continued to do well. It was because baseball, you know, that was a night, you know, the Indians channel. So we've been on hiatus since I left, and now the Indians have progressed into the postseason. So I'm still on hiatus. And I said, you know, that's a long time to be off the air. So now, I mean, we had some momentum going, but I have to regain it. But I'm looking to get back on the air at probably, you know, I don't know if it's going to be, you know, later this year, the fall, or beginning next year. But we're going to be back on, and I'm actually going to be, and it was just something I wanted to do since I came home. I brought it up to the local, a friend of mine who runs one of the local radio stations. I said, if instead of doing a boxing show, you know, and he said, no, I said, I'll create it, and we'll develop it, and, you know, we'll do it together. And it caught on. People loved it. So, but we kind of morphed from a boxing show into an entertainment show, comedy show. We were everything. So we had all kinds of people on. And people loved it. And it was great. And I had a great time doing it. And I miss it. So I'm looking to get back to it. But, man, you know, like I said, we've been off the air a little too long.
Yeah, right. It's the day and age with social media, man. You can literally, my advice to you, you should, dude, start doing like 30-second, 45-second daily videos, just short ones, and just pop.
Right. You know, it's funny you said that. People suggested that to me. People suggest that. I'm not, you know, people talk about doing these Periscope or something, or what you could do live stream video, you know, and I'm thinking, and look, like, I don't text, I don't email, I mean, on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook very much or putting things on Facebook. I only put things on when I think there's something to say. And too many people don't, you know. Yeah. Too many people putting stuff there, then they got nothing to say, and they keep putting stuff out there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's like, come on, man. So, I for me, it's like to do a show that I'm not even sure about would be interesting. I don't know. I don't know. You know, we'll see. But you're right. You're right. It'd be interesting. It'd be interesting. There's no doubt. No doubt. It'd be interesting. I'd have fun. You know, social media and, you know, it's become the big. You know, it's big. Everything. That's where everything's at.
Yeah, definitely. So, hey, Ray, talk to me about giving back to the community, because I know you've got the Boom Boom Mancini Foundation. Tell us a little bit about that.
When I came back, one of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to start a foundation because I had there's so many people that I had done things for, so many organizations that I, so I wanted to do my own. And I just, you know, I said, I've done it for others and there's things I want to do. And my mission statement was to keep it local, to keep it local. So that was it. So that's why we created it. And, yeah. And it's been great. It's been great.
Definitely. One thing that I do want to speak to you about just briefly, because I know you've spoke about it for over time, over and over again. So I was watching The Good Son a couple of weeks ago and watches The Life of Yourself. And it's got guys like Ed O'Neill and Mickey Rourke in it. And it documents. And, you know, it left me kind of teary, especially at the end when you get to meet Dooku Kim's son. And just a little interaction that he had with your children as well. Can you just tell us a little bit about that experience and how that left you?
Well, no, it's an experience I'll never forget, obviously. It's something I always wanted to do. I always wanted to, you know, I was wondering about the young man and never, you know, didn't know when the opportunity was brought to me about meeting him. I said, absolutely. I thought it's important for him. It's important for me. And I just. And, you know, before that, I didn't know what to expect. So when you saw me sitting on the stoop of my house in the front yard, that was it. And people, you know, it's funny because people say, how many takes did you take? I said, takes. I told the guys, you got one shot to get this. You got one shot. I can't do this again.
Yeah.
I can. So what you saw is what it was. They had three cameras, you know, different angles, and that's what you got. So, but it was very emotional. And I'm very so happy I did it. It was very, very moving for him and for me and my children, and very proud to be a part of that.
I just want to pick your brain a little bit just about your fighting career, about what your favorite fight was, who hit you the hardest, just a few little things want to pick your brain on.
Well, obviously, my three favorite fights are winning, first and foremost, winning the world title, obviously. Winning the world title against Arturo Frias. My first title defense in the town next to my hometown in Youngstown, Warren, Ohio. We did an outdoor football stadium, you know, American football, high school football stadium of 20,000 people. And why that's significant is we were at 28% unemployment. You have to say how you know, that people were cashing into welfare checks and unemployment checks to be able to come to the fight. And it just, it meant so much to me, you know, to be able to do that. And so that my first title defense in Warren, Ohio. And then, of course, my third favorite moment is defending my title at Madison Square Garden, September 15th, 1983, against Orlando Romero. And you know, for every little leaguer, you dream of playing in Yankee Stadium. For every fighter, you dream of fighting at the Garden. That's the mecca of boxing. And I was able to do that. And it's not only fight at the same place my father fought, but in the same ring. I didn't know that they had changed the ring. Madison Square Garden ring, now it's in Canastota, the International Boxing Hall of Fame. It was the same boxing ring that Jack Dempsey, Joe Louis, Rocky Marciano, my father, Henry Armstrong, all the great champions from forever fought. When you fought at Madison, it was the same ring. And that was very emotional for me to be able to fight in that ring and to experience that and to win the way I did. So, yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah, Ray, I forgot to congratulate you on 2015 being inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank
awesome.
You.
And then also, before we let you go, we got a couple more questions. I just want to say your reverence to your father, to your family, and your hometown, hearing it straight from your mouth is something special, and I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us and get to know our audience as well, Ray.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, Youngstown's a special time of town. You know that, being here. It's a special town. The people are wonderful, and it's a great place to grow up. It's a great place, and now again, it's a great place to grow up again, because for so long, people, young men and young women like yourself had to leave because there was nothing here. But now the town's on the climb again, and so it's a great time to be here, I think.
Awesome. Just before we let you leave, we've got a personality question for you, Ray. Now, Ray,
yes.
You're going to be hosting a dinner party. You got 5 invites. It can be anyone, dead or alive. It just can't be any of your family or friends. Who is Ray Boom Boom Mancini going to invite?
That's a great question. And it could be for anybody in history, correct?
Anyone, sir.
First and foremost, Jesus Christ. I would say Abraham Lincoln. To make it fun, really, I think it would be great conversation to stir things up with it. Adolf Hitler, find out what was, you know, I mean, because you got to have the wacky batting ones there. You got to have the wackadoo there, you know, to stir things up.
Yeah, someone asked me that at dinner last night. Me too. I said that as well.
We were just talking about this at different dinners then. Same thing.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, and plus, you know, good conversations. You know, that's Jesus Christ and Hitler having a conversation would be something. Like I said, Abraham Lincoln, Hitler, I think Babe Ruth, and Al Capone.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's awesome. And now, Ray, if anyone wants to follow your career online or just get in touch and things like that, what's the best way for them to follow you?
Follow me online. I'm at you know, on Twitter at Real Boom Boom, as opposed to the fake one. On Twitter, my Facebook is you know, Ray Boom Mancini on Facebook, and my fan page, my son runs my fan page, so that's Ray Boom Boom Mancini on Facebook, the fan page. I do some social media. Twitter or Instagram. Instagram now. Instagram is Mancini 3461.
Awesome.
That's awesome. Well, right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, and tell them, I'd love to, you know, talk with the people from down under. I mean, it's wonderful, man. It's always wonderful to meet people from so far away, and you know, I just enjoy to talk to people, and the great, you know, you got wonderful, wonderful fans down there in all sport. I mean, you know. The one sport I gotta ask real fast. I have a nephew that's big into it, and I don't get it. I don't understand it. To me, it's like the boringest thing in the world. That, you know, but they're big in your land, part of the world. Is cricket? Cricket's like watching. Yeah. I mean, now people like what? It's like they say about golf and baseball, American golf, American baseball. It's like watching paint dry. I get it, but cricket? Well, come on, man. When you got a sport that goes for game that goes for 3 or 4 days, what are you, nuts?
Yeah, Ray, I tell you what, mate, when we were growing up, cricket was awesome because it used to have all the different characters. Like, with the players back then, they used to have such good personalities, like yourself, like Ali. They used to all have great personalities. Now the players are all vanilla now, so we don't watch anymore. So, but you're right, it does go for 5 days, man, and it can be kind of like, it can be draining, so you kind of can only watch
an hour. Oh, man, you ain't lying, man. You ain't lying. But I always thought that was fun. But I had never been down to your part of the world. I'd love to come down there and visit, and that's on my bucket list.
Definitely,
that's on my
right. bucket Well, list. If you end up in Sydney, we're gonna look after you, man. We'll take you out to dinner. We'll show you around.
Well, that's what I was gonna ask. What's the more happening town? Melbourne or Sydney?
It's different, mate.
Like, Sydney, man, coming from an outsider's perspective, Ray, Sydney for sure.
Yeah, come to Sydney. If you had to choose one, come to Sydney, but they're different perspectives. It's like L.A. and New York. They're totally different cities, man.
I got you. So which one's Sydney, then New York or L.A.?
Sydney's L.A. Sydney's the beaches, yeah. Southern California. You know, I spent, like I said before the show, some years. I lived in Long Beach, right on the water.
There you go.
And,
there
you go. Yeah, you coming from L.A. all those years, you would like Sydney.
Yeah,
Melbourne, all right, I'm glad
Melbourne's
you
more New York kind of fashion, kind of cafes and restaurants sort of scene. So,
well, I'm a street kid from. I like the streets. I like the streets. I'm not much about. I, you know, people said to me about L.A. the beach and stuff. They said, you go to the beach as much. I said, yeah, I should drive by and go. There it is. There they are. I'm a street kid, but I would love to visit both. But either way, Sydney's the place. I'll come down and visit.
Definitely. Well, if we're in Youngstown. We'll have to buy you a steak and a few beers.
Well, please
too,
do.
Buddy.
Let me know.
Oh, definitely.
Let me know if you ever come this way.
We'll definitely let you know, Ray, man. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Ray. Take care. We'll talk
Take
soon.
Take care. Thank you. It makes me wanna creep. I got something for your mind, your body, and your soul.
I wish that what you and I could do. I wish that there was a book. Maybe there is one of all of, like, if somebody in our age bracket did. Of the generational sayings that our parents used to tell us, like these one-liners. And Ray is generations before us, but that one-liner, he said, one day you're the headline, one day you're at the breadline, that his dad had told him. And obviously the breadline, guys, is during the Great Depression, you were getting in line for a loaf of bread.
But I guess he didn't understand it until it actually happened to himself. Like, realistically, like when he was at the top of his career, he would have never thought that would ever have ended. Do you know what I mean? When you're on the top, and you never actually think back then, because it happens to everyone. It doesn't matter who you are. There is always going to be a start, a peak, and an ending.
That's so, life.
Yeah, that's just life in general. But, you know, when you're a 20-year-old, like I'm sure that I went through it, you went through it. When we were in our middle 20s, we both just thought we were indestructible. When it's in reality, you've got to make the most of time.
Yeah, it's amazing how powerful being ignorant is. But don't get it twisted, guys. Ray Mancini never, it was never like Rocky. It was never like becoming a world champion, having everything, and then how Rocky in the movies got poor again. No, Ray, it wasn't the case. Ray maintained his status. He also did a really good job of leveraging his career into other things. And that's why it's really important, if you're listening out there, to always have... We were talking to a guy recently, Grant Cardone, and he said numerous powerful things, but one specific thing on this topic, he said, what type of life would it be if you only had one dream, if you only had one goal? Obviously, Ray's one time, he wanted to be a world champion, he did that, and then he's directed movies, produced movies, did the Hollywood thing, and now he's, you know, went back home to Youngstown, and seems to me that he's fulfilled and he's culminated there.
Yeah, he's got his radio, he's got his charity, you know. I love guys that extend themselves. Actually, it's interesting what you said about wealth and keeping it. I read an article about him the other day, and I think he made $14 million over his career or something, and they reckon he's still retained 80% of it. So that's quite a bit of money. So that's credit to him and people that looked after him. Because it's easy just to, when you come from somewhere that doesn't have a lot, for the hangers-on to want more and more from you,
yeah,
that's huge.
Yeah, and the thing with Ray too, he didn't have a long career. He retired in his 20s. He won a world championship in his 20s. He said
8 years at the start.
Yeah, it was really short, man. It was a really short career, and it was a magical career. And guys, if you're too young to see any of his fights, YouTube the Ferreira fight or
on his website, he's got like 10 of his best fights on there. On his videos.
His style, really cool. Ray's style, even just hearing him talk to us, you could feel the energy, and that's how he fought. Ray fought with an urgency, and he was poetic, and he took a shot, and he gave a shot, and he hit like a middleweight, and he fought it, what, lightweight?
He was the same height as me, I think. He's listed at 5 foot
small,
five.
Small, yeah. It's 5'5", I think he fought it.
It's quite a big 135. For a 5 foot fiver.
Yeah,
most of them would be 5'8", 5'9", 5'10", sometimes in that weight division.
His hand speed, his footwork, and just to see the reaction too, you could YouTube it when he won his first title, how his dad runs into the ring. They show that on Still Standing, or maybe the one that you mentioned too.
On The Good Son.
The Good Son.
Yeah,
and just to see his reverence for his father, and also how he spoke about his sons.
Yeah,
it's so absolutely. Good to hear, man. I love hearing stories like that. You know, we were talking to in the fight game. If you have young sons out there, I don't think there's anyone listening that would want their young son to be a fighter. You know, no, it's not one of these things that you would be like, you know, guiding him into that world, because it's a tough road being a fighter.
Yeah.
And you know, the percentage of you actually being successful and not getting hurt is really low. And hearing him about his son, doing. The doing actor the right doing the right thing, doing the own thing. You know, we were talking to a boxing legend a few months back, and you know, it wasn't the case. You know, I don't think this guy was even in the picture at that moment, being involved in the life, and hearing how, you know, Leo runs his Facebook page, the fan page.
Yeah,
you know, it's a cool thing.
It's great because it could be a lot of pressure, like living as the son of Ray. You know, Ray Boom Boom Mancini, that wouldn't be easy, man. But to see them forging their own path and doing some great things themselves, that's awesome. I love that sort of story.
Yeah, and these gents, his boys were raised in Southern California, so that probably took a lot, you know, rather than them being raised in Youngstown, that would probably would have been a lot different, being in the shadow of Ray.
Yeah,
so
sure.
In L.A., that was, I wonder if that was some subconscious decision other than the weather to kind of, because that probably was super influential for them to be able to be their own people as well.
Definitely. Looks like... What other legends do you think we should get on? Maybe Buster.
Like just boxing?
Yeah.
I wanted to... So, Ernie Shavers. Do you know who that is?
Yeah.
Ernie Shavers, they call, like, Ali, Foreman. They say he was the hardest puncher. Larry Holmes brought him up. He's a Youngstown guy.
Awesome. Yeah. He's still...
He's in his early 60s probably by now.
Season, yeah.
When I was living in Vegas, he would always be there signing autographs. They had these sports memorabilia shops, which are really popular in Vegas. So you'd have like your Mike Tysons, Ernie Shavers, always pop. Pete Rose would always be in there signing autographs. But in the boxing realm, I want to talk to Mickey Ward. He's so, I don't even know.
Yeah, Irish Mickey Wall.
It's hard to get a hold of him to see what those fights were like with Arturo Gatti. You know, Pauly Malignaggi. I mean, he was never huge, huge. He's still young. I think he still fights. There was that fight with Malignaggi versus Miguel Cotto that I'll never forget. I never, and this was only about 10 years ago. Madison Square Garden, Malignaggi and Cotto are both from New York City. One's Italian, one's Puerto Rican. The crowd was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And I've never seen a kid go into a fight looking so pretty. Malignaggi was this really young, attractive Italian kid, hair all done up. And then just get, after the fight, he looked like he got beaten up by 10 guys. But what happened was, he withstood that Cotto storm of the first four or five rounds, and then he stole the last five, six, seven rounds, and he lost a really, really close split decision.
Yeah.
But in that moment, I became a big Malignaggi fan because he's not a heavy hitter.
You actually, that's interesting you bring him up because I liked watching Paulie fight, and then he fought Ricky Haddon, and he got his ass handed to him.
It was brutal.
I never wanted to watch him again because I thought he didn't try in that fight.
He thought he quit.
But then that Cotto fight,
yeah.
Respect to him, man, because, wow.
To be a boxer, and, like, we got to talk a little bit about Kelly, man. Kel, if you're listening, I hope he's doing great, man. You know, I haven't lived in my hometown in, shit, I'm 34, 20, 15 years. So I don't know what it's like. He was the guy who was a superstar, and then he never left Youngstown. There's stories of when he beat Jermaine Taylor, he was still living with his parents. So there's a lot of, like, influences when you have stardom and you come from a small town, and if you don't have that faith, like Ray said, and whether it may be your family, your friends, your religion, or yourself, it's going to be tough to stay on that straight path.
Yeah, of course.
Because you said people are going to be reaching for your pockets. Hey, you want to go out, and you know it's probably a little bit addicting, that energy.
Oh, it would be, and it's not something that you can get coached on, or you just different people handle it differently. And unfortunately, maybe for Kelly, he didn't handle it as well as Ray did. But, you know, life moves on. Kelly's only the same age as you, so
yeah.
He's got plenty of time to,
for sure.
To change
things. I have faith in him, man.
Do some good things as well, man.
I've known Kelly since we were 7 years old. And my dad used to, our dads were literally coaches together. We won championships together in baseball. And I, see, it's interesting. I was talking to a client of mine this week about, he's going through some troubled times. And all we are, like when we get older as people, we have all these pressures on us to live up or have a standard of what it's like to be a 30-year-old or what it's like to be a 40-year-old. But at the end of the day, we're all just that 7-year-old kid who just grew up.
Yeah.
And that's how I look at Kelly. I always look at Kelly as that 7-year-old, you know, and that's our bond. So when I do see him, we're like little kids. But when I go home, you hear about the paper. He made some bad choices here, made some bad decisions here, which we all do. It's just unfortunate. I like people turning it around. I like the story of a guy who's had it, lost everything, come back from it, and I'm just always cheering for that guy.
Yeah, definitely. He's still got plenty of time to turn around. Let's hope so. So best wishes to him. All right, guys, just before we go, just remember to get your free ebook from the website, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com. It's the abs workout of myself and Johnny. The little meals guide in there for you as well. So the people in Australia, we're coming into summer, probably perfect for that. The guys going into winter in America, same thing. It's always good to be year-round in shape, so check it out. You might get a few new ideas and a nice little program to get your motor going.
Yeah, guys, this is what Tristan and I do. We're coaches. We help people along the way. We see people on a one-on-one basis. We also have online clients, and this is an opportunity for us to show you guys what we're all about. It's not just the aesthetics part of a six-pack, man. It's not just it's the idea that we get our strength, we get our mobility, we you know, from the middle of our body. It's really important, core strength. And we have that on there. We have a diet plan, just a little segment of what it looks like if you're struggling with a nutrition program. It's kind of like a guideline to assist you to just get on that right track. Also on social media, guys, follow me, Johnny Stofko, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Tristan's on there. It's Tristan Canal Fitness. And through these pages as well, if you're not only a fan of the show, we're always putting up fitness tips. That stuff can get kind of tiresome, but more importantly, you'll be able to see how we interact with our clients through video and photos, and that's why we're really pushing this ebook, because we want to expand that reach, and it really takes about 10-15 seconds. Get on the website, visionboards.com, go to ebooks, put in your email. Also, you're not only going to get the ebook sent to you, your inbox, you're also going to be tied into the loop of like upcoming episodes. This thing's evolving at a rapid pace. We're getting a lot of good guests coming on, and what we like to do is feature questions, so that way you'll know who to come on, you'll be able to hit us up, and we'll be able to get you featured and link it up.
Definitely, guys. So send us an email, info@thevisionboardpodcast.com. Any feedback, guest requests, just check it out there. In the meantime, also remember, visit Onnit. You can actually access it through our page, www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/onit, and coupon code VISIONBOARD for 10% off. Johnny, you must be pretty stoked right now, dude.
Yeah, once again, thank you. You guys, Tristan organized this one, and this is I reached out to Boom Boom, or I attempted to, months ago, but I couldn't find a contact. So Tristan did this guy's an investigator. In another world, Tristan would have been in the FBI, like, researching and investigating, like, forensic crimes. The guy is, like, super thorough with finding, like, emails. And anyway, super stoked about that. And once again, the Ohio, it just adds another one to the Ohio and New Mexico library. Yeah, there's a lot of literally 20% of our interviews come from those two states. So,
that was a fun one to
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I could have just chatted with him about nothing the whole day.
Definitely. I'm sure that we'll hopefully meet him in person one day. Guys, thank you for tuning in. Just remember, if you could subscribe us via iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher for your first time, thank you for joining. And just remember, it is a free subscription. Tell your friends. Leave us a quick 5-star review. Johnny, you have a great day, my man.
You too, Tris Canal. Share the love, guys. You have a good day.
Cool. See you guys. It makes me warm now. I got